everyone. Welcome to the Insight Podcast. I'm super excited to be joined by my co-host, Dan, and joining us from behind the screen and off mic usually, Tuta Bentatu. We're so excited to have her. She's our Director of Member Experience, Member Engagement. What is your official title, Tuta?
It's Director of Member Experience, but it's Member Engagement Marketing and Events under, so yeah.
Excellent. Awesome. So that's great. At conference, a few of you who are listening might have joined us for a session that we did where we talked about team building and inclusivity, and we really loved the topic and thought it'd be great to bring Tuta on the show and share some of the highlights from that session and some of our ideas that we know that would be helpful for everyone. So today we really want to talk about inclusivity, belongingness, and engagement within our team. So Tuta, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me.
I didn't make it to your session, so this is going to be a great recap for me. So I'm excited to be here as well, and I'm happy to have Tuta here.
I thought it would be fun if we opened with some, what's a team building game that went wrong? Or when you're in a session, a meeting, and your boss is like, hey, we're going to, like, what's that game or that experience? You're like, oh, please, not again. So we can help people avoid doing that. Do you have anything that comes to mind, Tuta?
I don't know if I have anything that's annoying. I'm one of those people who probably is the annoying person with team building because I love like icebreakers and getting to know people. I guess that's why I do member experience. I'm the extrovert who gets introverts to be a little more extroverted. But I will say, I think we had talked a little bit about some of our pet peeves. I will say, I think what's difficult is sometimes there's not buy-in. People see icebreakers as a waste of time. So I think when they go into it with that, it makes it a little bit difficult. So I wouldn't say it's a pet peeve because I understand why some people don't want to do it. Sometimes it does feel forced and authentic and almost like it's just part of the meeting because it's part of the meeting. But I truly do like when people buy in and you get that icebreaker where you meet with someone who you probably wouldn't ever work with or anything like that. And you get to know something really cool about them and you make that connection. And next time you see them once every couple months, you have something to talk about. So I would say it's just not necessarily engaging or feeling like sometimes they're forced.
I like that. I mean, maybe it's about perspective, because if we go in thinking like, oh, not another one, but instead, how can I be an active participant and help somebody else have a good time? I don't know if you've ever like played any improv games, but my background is like YMCA camp counselor and an advisor for an improv team when I taught high school, and just learning that thing of like, make other people look good around you. And so I think I kind of take on that responsibility of like, okay, yeah, this is maybe not what I'm excited about, but right. I want the person leading to do well. And I want the person I'm working with to do well. So maybe it's a point of responsibility, but also your point about like personality, that's something I hadn't considered. Like when you're designing games, maybe you have to be mindful of the introverts and extroverts and like how they might receive them. That's a super cool tip.
Yeah, it sounds like we have three extroverts here too. So I like getting to know people, but I do like clear rules. I disapprove when the goals aren't really put out there very clearly. Like, hey, we're going to do this, find out something. I like those quick icebreakers, the ones where you find out unique information about somebody's past or hobbies or what they're into. I like learning about people, and it's a good conversation starter. And I think it gets you in the right mindset for that meeting. I do like getting to know people, and I think icebreakers are important, but that's the extrovert in me.
So as we move into our series of questions, the format today we thought would be great. Dan's going to ask some questions, but like we do with all of our episodes, you know, whoever has answers, I think this is super collaborative. Let's just chime in and share ideas. So Dan, you want to kick us off with the first question?
Yeah. So our topic today is recruiting, building, engaging, sustaining inclusive teams. Why should people care about this topic? What's the importance here? Let me know.
I think just enlisting, recruiting, building, engaging, and sustaining teams alone, not even inclusive teams, I feel like that's a challenge to begin with. But then on top of that, making your staff members feel like they belong in their work environment. I think too, the next, you know, 10 to 20 years, the workforce is going to change significantly. I think people really want to be tied to the work that they're doing. I know personally, I do. Because if you're going to a job where you don't feel like you're included or your voice is not heard, you're probably not going to really engage as well as you would in a place where you feel comfortable. So I think it's really important that we do cultivate teams that have multiple perspectives, diversity, and a lot of the times, you know, some people have really strong technical skills. Some people have more core skills, or a term I heard recently was power skills. And I really like that. And I think, right? I know it's, you guys can see Jamie's face, but she made a like a oh face, like, oh my gosh. And I was like, that is such a great term for those skills, because I feel like sometimes the word soft skills really makes it sound like it's a negative thing, which it's really not. And I feel like I've been in that situation where I was the one who wasn't as technical, but I worked with someone who was technical, and the perspectives we both brought and the way that we worked together just worked really well. And it helps when you're just in the work that you do and feeling comfortable in being part of that team or that environment as well.
I would add, like, for the tech people that are always thinking, like, how can I be more proactive or predictive over reactive? This is one of those ways. Like, you have a strong onboarding process, or if you have a strong way to build camaraderie or organization in your meetings that people can rely on, you're kind of handling a lot of the pain points related to running or leading or being a team member. And so I think that's the way that you can also think about this. Like, what are ways that you can kind of program or automate some of those pain points that help your team get a little bit stronger?
Awesome. How are we defining inclusivity and belonging?
I love this. So, like, past English teacher, like, definitions were always the best way to kind of get the week started. But I think with anything, I do a lot of work now, like, trying to think about what problem we're solving or trying to understand the big picture. And I think definitions fits right along with that. Like, we have to know the definition of the problem or the project, all of those pieces, like, have the scope, I guess, is another way to kind of connect this to our tech world. And so for me, inclusivity is really just about being welcoming. Like, you are, as Tuta said, you're being mindful of the types of people that are in your environment and ensuring that the space is a place that they can connect with others. They feel safe to share ideas. You're creating a culture where voices matter and people are invited, I think, is a big part of it. Making sure inclusivity is, like, they see themselves in the work, I think, is another piece that we talk about that with kids and curriculum, you know, seeing yourselves in the curriculum. But for me, it's like, you know, you come into an office space and you're like, yeah, I belong here. This is my home away from home, in a sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I'm the opposite. I'm really bad at definitions. I usually use the word to define, which is not the true definition. But yeah, I just feel like it's not to use belonging to describe it, but it is feeling like you belong, feeling like, to your point, Jamie, you're welcome. You come in and, you know, I think there are environments where people include people, but they're not truly included in the sense, you know, they're there, but they're not actively part of the conversation. They're just kind of there. So being part of that conversation, having that voice, feeling comfortable to speak up, you know, if you don't agree with something or anything like that. So just feeling like you can be yourself in your work environment and the environment that you're in and not have to worry about walking on eggshells or being judged for certain opinions that you feel and things like that. Now, obviously, I think that can be difficult with some of the politics that we have. Yeah, sure. There are times where, you know, it might be better not to speak up, things like that too. But I think mostly, like, within your own team, feeling like you're an equal partner to everyone else on the team as well, despite the position that you're in.
Mm-hmm. Tuta, as a team leader, what are some things I could do to promote that type of environment?
Oof. I mean, it's really challenging remote. So for those of you who don't know, everyone who works at site is remote for the most part. We do have an office with one staff member who goes in. So it has been challenging remotely. I think, you know, we try to do regular check-ins with our team so that way it doesn't feel like someone, or so that way one of our team members doesn't really feel isolated or that they're just working from home and they're clocking in, clocking out, that sort of thing. We still try to do some in-person retreats. So we do it with our whole staff. We do it with our own teams as well. And I think just trying to incorporate it into our team meetings, we had a game, or I got a game. It's called Let's Get Deep Friends Edition. So we would start one of our meetings with one of those questions. And it would be everything from, you know, what was your worst Uber experience to, or what is your biggest fear? So, like, it would, the questions would get deeper depending on how, I guess, established your team was and how close you wanted to get. So I think doing things like that can help build that and make people feel more comfortable with each other. And there's little things that you can do that are really quick. I mean, we really only spent 10 minutes per meeting discussing that question. And I feel like hearing everyone's answers really gave everyone a different perspective of everyone as well.
Awesome. Okay. Now, Jamie, for you, got another side question. As a team member, not necessarily a team leader, what could I do to help promote that in my environment as well?
One easy way to, as I mentioned earlier, kind of the improv mindset of make your team look good. So as a team member, one thing I like to do is try to notice somebody who hasn't spoken. And if somebody's speaking over them, let's say they're in a meeting and like they try to talk and they just don't get their voice heard, I'll say, oh, hey, everyone, Dan has something to add. And so I just try to be that amplifier when needed. The other thing that I like to do is just be the person who remembers the little things like, oh, don't forget this person's gluten-free. Like, so you don't really have to be the leader to keep people feeling like they belong and noticed. And those are just little ways that you can take care of each other.
I just wanted to add too, as a leader specifically, is creating that space where people feel comfortable to speak up. Or like Jamie was saying, if you have a team member who's noticing maybe someone else is getting talked over or they've unmuted and they don't have a chance to talk, having that space within your own team where people feel comfortable doing that. Because I know sometimes that's not always the case. And as a leader, feeling like people are comfortable enough to come to you if there is an issue or you've done something, and being open as a leader to really not get defensive about that and acknowledge what you may have done to cause issues or maybe make someone feel not as included, and take a step back and say, okay, how do I fix this? Or if another team member made someone else feel like they weren't included, taking a step back and looking at your environment and saying, what am I doing that's potentially causing this as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tuta, that was very important. You said don't get offensive about it. I know I have to consciously think about, oh, somebody gave me this feedback. How can I take that in a positive aspect that they, I know they were trying to be positive, but not let that attack my ego, and find a way to, you know, I thank them for that feedback and say it's appreciated, and try to find a way to bridge that gap if there's like some kind of issue. I don't always do things perfectly, and it is that extra learning things from other people that it helps me understand the correct path might not necessarily be the path I always want to take, but sometimes it's the better path for the course of the team. So I think, yeah, getting your ego out of the way and listening to others is definitely how you make it there. Thank you for that. All right, let's start at the beginning. How do we recruit or hire with an eye towards belongingness?
I love this topic. There's a couple easy things to think about. So one is your job description. There's interesting research about words that are in the job description that invite certain types of applicants. So you can run your job descriptions through like a gender bias scanner and see if you're inadvertently like writing it towards a particular audience. So that's one way. Another one is really thinking about your environment. I read this fascinating study about they researched technology departments or technology spaces, classrooms, courses tend to be a little more about sci-fi. And if I turned my camera and you could see my office, it's like 99% Star Wars. There's like one Marvel action figure and one thing from Office Space. So yeah, it's like, it's all Star Wars in here. And what it said was the study showed that women walking into that space may not feel as connected or as someplace that they would see themselves working for a very long time, which is, I think, biased because I think a lot of women like Star Wars. But the study showed that things that are a little more Star Wars heavy versus neutral tend to set a certain kind of expectation or tone and inadvertently make it feel like somebody could say, oh, I don't really belong here because I don't like that. So that's one way to just kind of like check your environment where you're interviewing somebody, make sure it's neutral, make sure it's welcoming. I think that's one thing you can really pay attention to. Another one is being invitational. Like you don't have to wait till the application start. Like if you have people in your environment that you're interested in, tell them like, hey, I think you have the skills we're looking for. Please apply. I can't make any promises, but I really noticed something in you. And sometimes that's enough to get them to either increase their skill set and be ready for the next round of interviews. So that's great. And then my last note, this is a fast one. When you're scanning job applications, just really be mindful of the job gap. And we tend to have an instinctual reaction like, oh, there's years missing. And so there's some story there, there's something that happened. And that could inadvertently screen out more women from the position. So, or men that took time off to raise their kids too. So again, checking my own bias there that I'm assuming job gaps are only a women issue. So just have that ready to, you know, ask a follow-up question or something that gives that person a chance to explain in a way that doesn't naturally like screen them out of the application.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, one of the things that I recently, we did some DEI training with Tiffany Martin, who is one of the speakers at the Site conference. And she had talked about blind reviewing applications. So just removing the names and all of that. So that way, you know, there is no inherent bias when you read a name or you see something. And I love that. And with any of the hiring that I'm doing, I want to try to do it. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to approach that because I feel like I'm going to have to see the names at some point, but the thought of it or the idea of it was really cool to me and something that I thought I want to try. And then to your point, Jamie, about recruiting, I think I'm always keeping an eye out for people around me who, you know, trying to identify those skills and what I'm looking for and trying to say, hey, you should apply for this as well. And then also just kind of casting a wider net with our applications. One of the things that I used to do when I worked at the school district was post to job boards for or college job boards for a lot of our entry level technician positions, because that's kind of a great place to get a whole different pool. And when I talk to a lot of people, they don't really understand. When I worked at the school district, they didn't really understand what I did. And some to this day still think I'm a teacher. So I think sometimes thinking about technology and education is not a place that maybe some people coming out of college or coming out of their programs would think about looking. And it's a really good opportunity and a good job straight out of college. So I think just kind of looking at the way that we are trying to recruit as well and where we're trying to recruit will also help us get a more diverse applicant pool as well.
Totally. Awesome. If I could add one more piece to that, is this is something I mentioned in the site session. So thanks for helping remember that. We can look for adjacent skill sets when we're recruiting. So it's not just the classic, especially the technology positions. Like, we have an eye for the skills we're looking for, but there are some, you know, as our clerical staff have leveled up to kind of manage all the systems that are in their environments right now, I hired an office manager who's now our data specialist, and she had an accounting background. And that, if you're looking for a CalPADS person, California people, look for an accountant, because they have an eye for that detail. And that like unlocked a world for us. So just again, kind of be mindful of the adjacent skills.
Wow, that's a really good way to think about that. Adjacent skills. That's really cool. How one skill set can naturally lead to another one. That's a neat concept. After they've accepted the position, and now what? How do we deliver after that recruitment? Though they're coming on to their new position, how can we move forward to be inclusive?
This makes me think of, if you're familiar with kind of project management planning, like this is, or change management, this is like you're kind of delivering on the expectation. So you're following through with that handshake. And I think it's just important, you know, to really just be true to yourself. You're not hopefully changing anything from the beginning to this middle part, but it is creating opportunities and experiences for the person to join the team. Think of it as like the newcomer versus old timer kind of position. Both parties are going to change if you set it up correctly. Like the old timer who kind of has the insider knowledge and knows everything about the environment or the workflow has a lot to offer, but the newcomer coming in has a fresh perspective. And so I think, you know, prepping the team members that are going to, you know, have a new addition to just be open to the new ideas and not, it's so easy. The new person comes in all eager, bright eyed, and they're like, I've got so many ideas. And the old timer's like, yeah, but this is how we do it around here. I think, you know, creating a mindset of change and innovation for everybody kind of welcomes those newcomers in. So that would be my recommendation, is just like set expectations with both parties. And to this point earlier about some of those icebreaker games, like the ways that you can just like get people to know each other outside of the day to day, I think is important. And it can be 5 minutes in a meeting, you know, asking a question like, what made up world would you all want to live in? And then you instantly like get to know everybody. We did this with my team. We all would live in dystopian universes. Like we just like that. And we're like, maybe that's actually not the best choice. But until we like said it out loud and got to talk about it, it was pretty funny. And then now we all have that joke. We know about it. Another one that's easy is, I noticed one of my teammates is really good at, he loves cars like very much. It's his thing. He's on car websites all the time. And so the SEL kind of game we played that day wasn't for him. It was just for him, but not everybody else. I had him pick everybody's car. So like, what did he think we should be driving? It was hilarious. So like how he saw us was kind of revealed in that game. So there's ways to kind of honor the newbies and the old timers in a sense, experience group.
Yeah. The onboarding process is so important too, because it's really the new person's first interaction with your organization. So, you know, if they have a negative experience with onboarding, if there's not a clear onboarding plan, or, you know, there's not really a lot of teamwork or anything like that, they might feel isolated and feel, you know, what did I do? Did I make the wrong decision? And I think especially, I talked a little bit about how the workforce is going to change. Since a lot of what I do is member engagement, one of the things that I've been trying to focus on is engaging younger members, because a statistic that I heard actually kind of scared me, where 30% of the workforce in 2030 will be Gen Z. So, and they have just very different attitudes and mindsets towards work in general. So, and pretty soon we're going to have 3 to 4 different generations working together at once. So I think it's really important to make sure that when they're coming in, they feel like they are comfortable and there is a clear onboarding process. So that way they feel connected to the job. I think a lot of younger people too do want to feel more connected to their jobs. And I'm seeing a lot of them jump around from job to job and kind of just looking for the next thing. So if you want someone to stay, you want to give them a really good onboarding process. And one thing that I've learned as a leader that I think I've struggled with, I mean, I've always understood that professional development is not one size fits all. And I think a lot of things aren't one size fits all. I don't think onboarding is going to be one size fits all either. It's not just a checklist of here's your onboarding packet. You're onboarded now. People are going to work at different paces. People are going to have different understandings and backgrounds coming in. So really making sure that you're meeting them where they're at. And a lot of this work isn't easy. It's dedicating the time too to make sure that they are working at a pace that's comfortable for them and executing what they need to do in their job, but also making sure that they feel comfortable, they don't feel pressured, and that it's manageable for them too.
I love that. Like the addition I've done with our onboarding this year is adding a little bit more time and space. So what I mean is we have our checklist, we have all the systems. I have this, like, you know, if I'm talking about the technologist level, I have 32 items that a technologist should be able to do, right? And that's the roadmap of how to ask for training because you don't know what you don't know. And so, but the expectation is this is going to take you a year to learn. You're not going to know this immediately. And so now we build in check-in. So if we're onboarding long-term subs, for example, they get a pre-meeting with the tech department, but understanding they're not going to remember half of what we're teaching them. So then we schedule one like the day before they start, and then we have one scheduled at the end of the first week. And then somebody's in the room with them on the first day. We've just made the declaration that tech isn't going to get in the way of somebody having a successful start in our organization now. But again, the change was, like you're saying, Tuta, it's not just a checklist. It's those multiple check-ins because people are not going to retain everything you give them at the beginning. And you have to just set the expectation that it is okay. I mean, man, if we audit our environments, there are so many technical systems that just the everyday user in a non-technical position is going to be overwhelmed with. And we just have to be mindful of that.
Exactly. And I love that you said you give them a year because that's kind of how I see it. I feel like I don't ever expect someone to come into a role and know what they're doing in the first 6 months. There's going to be so much that they're going to learn in the year, especially I think in our situation, we've had a lot of people who come from outside of education or technology. So there's a steep learning curve right there alone in learning how education and technology work. And education alone, you know, the acronyms plus the technology acronyms. I tell my staff all the time, if we're in a meeting and someone throws out an acronym that you don't know, just send me a message on Teams and I'll tell you what it is. And we even have the CTO mentor acronym library. And even sometimes I'm like, I know a lot of acronyms. I don't even know what that one means. So yeah, I think it's just kind of understanding that people are going to come in at different levels and you have to invest the time and let them invest the time too.
That's such a good call out that like language could be a barrier to inclusivity, like the language of like the place that you're working and just be mindful of that. I don't think I have like a language onboarding like protocol. I'm going to think about that. Thanks, Tuta. That's awesome. Yeah.
I would say that education particularly changes so much throughout the year. There's different tasks at different times.
Right.
It takes an entire year to at least have exposure to those things that happen. Oh, this happens in mid-January and this happens in fall. And there's all those different things that only happen once a year that have big impacts to us. So it takes a whole year just to know what's going on and to keep good notes so that somebody who is being onboarded can follow that process, right? You talked about a checklist, Tuta, and that could be a lifesaver for some people. Okay, now that we have that person and they're in and they're part of the team, what are some non-cheesy ways we can help build the team? Jamie, you got something for me?
I mean, you said non-cheesy, but I immediately thought of food. So that's where I was going to. Maybe you too. But I mean, food is a great way to gather. I guess if it's virtual, it's a little bit harder for our remote teams, but you could also just still plan, like bring our lunch and let's just hang out. It's just the conversations can just be different when food is involved. And I think that's nice. But like I said, I send out like a form. So I kind of know everybody's dietary preferences because I'm complicated. And so I assume everybody else is. I want to notice that and be supportive. And I feel like it goes a long way if I know somebody loves a certain food or can't eat a certain thing. Like I try to take care of them through food. So I think that's an easy way to build the team up.
For the record, Jamie is not difficult. I've eaten with her, even though she has dietary restrictions and she's very flexible.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I feel like it's hard because it kind of what I mentioned earlier about, you know, there has to be some buy-in, I think, on building a team. I think people have to want to be part of building the team too. So I think in some ways you're not going to avoid the cheesiness and it's going to feel awkward at first, but I think it's just kind of a matter of powering through that and creating those spaces and opportunities. To Jamie's point, I remember we used to do a monthly lunch in our department with everyone and we had a big team. And it was optional. We would go somewhere and we'd pick like a shopping center to go and all meet up. But like some people could bring their lunch. They didn't have to feel obligated to buy lunch and things like that. So I think just creating those spaces too, where people have the opportunity to get to know each other. Like I mentioned, we're remote. So I like hearing when my staff members kind of just have their own relationships with each other. They're like, oh, I was talking to this person earlier. And I'm fine if they take, you know, 10, 15 minutes throughout the day just to check in with other people, because I know working fully remote can be super isolating. So I want them to build those relationships with their colleagues. So I think making it okay for people to talk to is another thing. I think in sometimes people associate people talking as not working, which, you know, as an extrovert and someone who loves collaboration, that is not the case at all. In fact, I feel like I'm always on with work, unfortunately, where it leads back to an idea about work. So I think we need to kind of change the way we see certain things, like being loud equals not working and stuff like that, and creating those spaces and opportunities for other members, other team members to connect to.
So I have... this may sound crazy, but maybe it doesn't. Our department meetings each week are 2 hours. And I was like, this is too much time in meetings. And I would cut it down to an hour. We didn't have enough time for the team building part, which was just talking about random things like, what show are you watching? What's your kid up to? Like all of those things. And so now I try to keep the agenda to about an hour in length. And it's still, we still have our 2 hour meetings and it's, but it's so nice. I mean, I think we missed that during the pandemic when we were doing all of our meetings online, and occasionally we'll do that. But I think it is valuable because you get more from the team when people are close. I would add having some sort of chat system. So whatever platform you choose to use, we use Slack, really helps people stay connected. And I know people are having side conversations and that's wonderful. Like they can have a group maybe that I don't know about, but they're like, I've seen camaraderie build up among the team because they have this way to talk to each other because everybody works at a different site. So that's been really good. We also do things like movie nights. Like, well, when some new movie that we're all interested in, like whoever wants to come, we'll do that. We do like family picnics at the end of the year. So everybody can bring their kids and we meet at one of the school sites and all the little kids can play on the playground. And so there's little ways like that that you can bring everybody together. And my last one is have different members of the teams be teachers. So everybody's an expert in a system that they're working on. So allowing different people to kind of have an like a positional power or experience of teaching, I think helps bring people together. So that's something that's really nice. And everybody gets to do it. So no matter the position, they're all kind of experts at what they do. And to share ideas with others, I think is a great way to give them a spotlight and feel included.
I think we also need to be cautious of when we are doing a lot of things as a whole group, also respecting and understanding that sometimes other people might not be able to participate. So like, if, especially if you're doing stuff outside of work hours, just being cognizant, you know, people have children, other things, they might not be able to do that, but also making sure that if you still proceed with that, that when you come back into the office, they don't feel like there's cliques or groups that have been established, because, you know, some people might not, or they just might have more flexibility to do things with people outside of work, outside of office hours and stuff. And I've seen that happen, and it's not intentional. It's just some people just gravitated toward each other and it created a work environment unknowingly where it created cliques. And so as a leader, just being mindful of that, if you start to notice maybe one or two people are pulling away from the rest of the group, try and, you know, engage with that before it becomes a bigger problem and try to understand why and see if there's a way that you can include them and make sure that everyone does feel included.
Yeah, we want to support those friendships that naturally occur, but you don't want people feeling left out because of them.
Exactly.
What can we do to support those teams ongoing and down the line? So we're making sure we're still following our goals of inclusivity and helping people feel like they're wanted.
My go-to for this is always thinking about people's future goals. Are they happy where they are? What do they want to do next? And maybe they're happy and they're going to stay in this position forever, but how can I make the position a little bit different for them? So like one of our internal kind of team mantras is be dispensable. Like I want people training away their position, you know? So if you're always in a room fixing a printer, teach that person how to do the basics so you don't have to go next time, so that you can go on to the next bigger and better challenge. And so that's our mindset, is like leave everybody smarter than we found them. And so I think having a job that kind of has that sense of change and flux and like new helps people feel like we're moving forward, and having that sensitivity of like, okay, what are your goals? What do you want to learn? I offer my teammates, they can purchase a Coursera course or edX and like do some learning. I'll send them to conferences. So just again, that personal growth, I think, is a real big part of being part of the mission and vision of the team.
Awesome. I totally agree. I was going to say professional development and professional learning is a big part of that. And kind of how I mentioned earlier, it's not one size fits all. So doing those goals, seeing what people want, things like that. I think also just as a leader, you know, monitoring, making sure that people do feel comfortable and being engaged with your staff, making sure that they have a comfortable relationship with you and the rest of the team. And I think we talked a little bit about documentation, and this kind of goes along with Jamie's example of trying to make the role different, is constantly reevaluating what they're doing, seeing if there's ways to streamline it so they can focus their time on something else that they like, or automating some of the tasks that they're doing so that way they can focus on a different project or something like that. So yeah, I think it's just really listening to your teams and making sure that they're comfortable in their roles and supporting their goals. I know it's a challenge because there's a lot of open positions in education right now. They're hard to fill. People want to fill them and have people who want to stay. But at the same time, the way that I see it is I want my people to grow if they want to grow. I don't want them to stay in the same position because it's convenient for me and they're great. I want them to go on and do great things. And I expect at some point that my staff are going to outgrow me and go somewhere else. So I think one of the things that's great too is just documenting the great work that they're doing and having that documentation in place. So that way, when you do have somebody who comes in new and you have to go through the process again, it's going to be a lot easier on you versus, I mean, I think we've all had it where we had those rock star employees that we lost and you felt it when they were gone. So, and I think there are people who will always have that impact no matter what, but I think softening the blow a little bit and having the documentation, professional development, all of that documented makes a huge difference as well.
Yes, it's great. Tuda, just that's what we need to do. My new data specialist accountant slash office manager, I used Asana to onboard her. And so I mapped out like all the trainings related to CalPADS. I was like, I'm going to invest the hours to build out her position. I didn't ask her to do this, but she's brilliant. She has now documented her whole position in that task board. So because we know she's not here forever. She's too good for us. Right. So she just has built out this beautiful, like, we're calling it the lottery book now instead of the bus book. I got corrected on that the other day of like planning for your demise, like planning for your fortune, I think is a really good reframe. Yes. So our lottery books now, right? If somebody like would disappear tomorrow because they won the lottery, what do we have left? And so, yeah, documentation is the hard part, but it is creating it as part of your protocol is awesome.
Yes. And I will recommend Tango as a tool. I know there's a lot of similar tools like it where it essentially records your screen and makes documentation for you. It's been a lifesaver. If you run a help desk or a knowledge center, it will be a lifesaver for you if you're not using it. So highly recommend Tango as a documentation making tool.
That should be like a future segment, Dan. We should do like favorite tech tool of the week. Like, what are you using now that we need more people to know about? That's fun.
The week I learned about it, I told everyone about it. So
that's so cool.
That's an awesome idea. Do we have any parting ideas or suggestions before we wrap this up? Tuda, you have anything you want to bring to us?
I feel like in general, we say diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. You know, I feel like that's a topic that can be very polarizing for people and also just be a tough issue or a tough topic to broach. But one of the best things that I've heard recently is if you have equity and inclusivity, you'll get the diversity as the outcome. So I would just say, you know, if you're in your own organization, you're struggling to diversify your team, maybe focus on that equity and inclusion and creating that space and making some minor tweaks. And I think the diversity will follow, hopefully. So I guess that's it. And I always just say, anytime I speak, this takes time, unfortunately. It's a lot of time, but it is really important. And as a former project manager, I think if you invest the time up front, it's going to save you a lot of time in the long run. So I know it's daunting, but I would say start small if you can.
Jamie, do you have any thoughts for us to wrap this up with?
I love the mindset of thinking about like what's missing or who hasn't spoken yet. So kind of analyzing that, like in school districts, like we tend to focus a lot on the teachers, especially in tech teams. It's like, what do the teachers need? And so now I've adopted the mindset of like, okay, what do our support staff need equally? And that has just been a different way to look at things. So whether it's organizing how we're going to do trainings for the summer or any of that thing. So just like, or, you know, oh, wow, we really don't have a student perspective on this kind of project. Like, whatever that is, like, look for what's missing. Again, that kind of fixes the belongingness and the inclusive piece. So it's just another way to analyze your projects and your work.
Thank you for that. And I want to take this time to thank everybody for joining us and listening to us here today. Shout out to our producer, Charlie Wofford, behind the scenes, and now our unmuted today's podcast champion, Tuta Bentitu. I'm Dan Ramirez with Jamie. I'm going to mess your name up. Sorry.
Jamie Lou Satter.
Jamie Lou Satter. And this has been another Site Mini Bite episode. Thank you, and we'll see y'all next time.